Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
It's time for the Roundtable with Round Daddy.
Hey, Round Daddy.
The Roundtable with Round Daddy.
Me, James Strebel, Big Daddy.
With your host, James Strebel.
Hey, Round Daddy, James Strebel. Gotcha.
On ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Are the Jello shots a write-off, Dexter says? I don't know. Dexter says I don't know. It would be...
I know last year, Cane's Chicken, the CEO or founder of Cane's Chicken, bought a ton of them on behalf of LSU. Just stacked the pallet.
All right, it's the Roundtable here on ESPN 680, 105.7, and an action-packed show thus far. We'll have Kendrick Haskins here in just a few minutes. Big thanks to Matzo Pie for dropping off some epic pizzas and focaccia bread for lunch today. Head out of to Matzo Pie's Anchorage location for a unique dining experience. Also, visit the Douglas Loop and Butchertown locations. Stop in, pick some up, and then get some 1020 craft brews while you're at it. Discover the delicious handmade brick oven pizza only at Matzo Pie. And Anna, I came in, I looked for some cookies today. I didn't see any cookies.
I think James was doing a psyop on us.
He may have been
a misinformation campaign.
Yeah.
And why did he look at us like we were crazy? We were like, I've never heard.
Yeah, he's like, Matzo Pie's cookies are number one. I was like, huh?
Maybe there's two slices of pizza and maybe one little bite of focaccia bread
back
left
there
when I get here.
Exactly. It's all gone. It's like, and by the way, before you get Haskins on here, a quote from Dion Walker. He just had an interview with Pro Football Focus, and he says this about Louisville. I can't wait to show them that they're still Lil Bro. So
yeah,
that's
baby.
Coming from our top ten draft pick, potentially Dion Walker. Let's go ahead and get him on here. Kendrick Haskins from Wave 3, sports director over there. Good afternoon, Kendrick. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you all?
Doing good. Now, Kentucky's journey in Omaha came to an end today. They did make it to Wednesday in the College World Series. Did y'all end up sending anybody out there? Is Dusty Baker roaming around Omaha by himself, wondering what to do next that the Cats are out?
No, we were waiting to see if they made it to the championship series before we were going to go.
There we go. Okay.
Came up a little short. Yeah. When that game got postponed yesterday and it was going to be a doubleheader if they won today, yeah, I kind of lost faith that they was going to
advance. Yeah.
So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for Florida to have to play two games and have to play Texas A&M twice. That's going to be tough.
Oh, no, absolutely. Now, speaking of Dusty Baker, I had to throw this out there too, Kendrick. Is he moping around the office because of Mookie Betts?
Oh, my God. I avoided texting him for a day just for that reason.
Just to let it lie a little bit,
he said,
you know.
Oh, my God.
Let him grieve.
The morning set in. Yeah, let him mourn it a little bit. I still haven't even picked on him about it.
Oh, wow.
We're going to get that done today.
Look at Kendrick Haskins, you know, extending an olive
benevolent branch.
The benevolent Kendrick Haskins extending an olive branch to Dusty Baker. I love it. There we go. Well, don't be too hard on him.
That's about it. I was just busy the last couple of days.
See, that would be too nice.
Too busy for you, Dusty Baker. And don't rub it in too much because Mookie Betts, by all accounts, will be back before the season's over. So he should be back unless he has to have surgery. They said no surgery, so we'll see. Now, Kendrick, you interviewed both new head coaches. You interviewed Pat Kelsey and then followed that up by interviewing Mark Pope. We'll start with Pope here. I know you've interviewed Cal many times, and, you know, he was at Kentucky well over a decade. What was the big difference that you noticed between interviewing John Calipari and now interviewing Mark Pope as the head coach of Kentucky?
That's a good question. I hadn't really thought that much about it. with Cal, he made you feel like he was genuinely interested in you, even though in the back of your mind you knew he wasn't. But he made you feel that way, and it was a nice thing. I mean, and Cal is a genuine good person.
Yes.
Just right on the surface, Cal is a good person. So he was always fun. Pope is just salt of the earth, goofy kind of guy that's right up my alley.
Yes.
And so I really like talking to him. He came in, and first thing he noticed is I had on my Ja Morant tennis shoes. The first thing he said, hey, I like those shoes.
So
he
went, oh, nice.
Get out. You got a compliment from the style maven.
Yeah, but he's a really nice guy. He's goofy. He's really personable. I mean, he comes in and he's talking the whole time, and so that was awesome.
And that helps you out too, because you know you can ask the question and just kind of let him go. Because I'm sure you've been in interview situations before, Kendrick, and I have too, where you ask a question and you get back a one or two word answer, and you're like, okay, I guess I'll move on to the next one.
I get the vibe from him that he wants to make you feel comfortable too.
Yeah, definitely. And he's just definitely not pulling teeth with him. I think we got 10 minutes with him. And I think I may have gotten 3 questions in, maybe 4.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Dream interview.
Absolutely. What do you feel like, you know, again, and I'll get to Pat Kelsey here after this question, and I'll probably ask the same question about Pat Kelsey. What's the biggest difference in the way he talks about Kentucky basketball that you've noticed? Like, what's the change in the program from the standpoint of the way Mark Pope talks about it?
There is the difference of someone who is outside looking in, like Cal was, coming into the program, and then somebody who's in the program, who's lived it, breathed it, knows everything about it. That's why I thought he was a good hire from the get-go. He understands what it is. He understands how crazy the fans can be. He understands, and he knows it coming in. And you can tell it by the way he talks. He takes so much pride and being a part of the UK family, and it oozes out with everything he says. There's not somebody on this earth, I think, who appreciates taking over that job more than Mark Pope does.
Yeah, and you could feel that excitement. Now, with Pat Kelsey, did you get any apologies if I missed it, but did you get any one-on-ones with Kenny Payne while he was coach at Louisville, especially you know the first year of him being here at Louisville?
The first year, yes, we did get one-on-one with him.
Okay.
Then, of course, I did the coaching show, so I got one-on-one with him every week.
Right. Now, so, I mean, same question. What's the biggest difference between interviewing Pat Kelsey and Kenny Payne? I mean, that has to be even a bigger chasm between those two than even John Calipari and Mark Pope.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the first thing that stands out is just the energy and just how energetic, even though Kelsey was a little bit reserved, a little bit laid back when we got him for our one-on-one.
Really?
2 weeks ago now. Yeah, he was a little laid back. I think it's a few schools of thought on that. First is you can't rev that hot all the time.
Oh, and he revs hot.
Like he had. Yeah. And then I think that he was maybe a little bit overwhelmed. Not about the job or anything like that. It's just how much media he had to do that day. Because we all got 20 minutes with him. And
oh,
it was
wow.
All 4 TV stations and a couple other blocks. I know Jody got him. And I think somebody else got him. So by the time I got to him, I was like fifth.
So he was about done.
He's close to being done. They're getting close to practice time. And so I think that was part of it. And then we were joking before the interview started because Kent Taylor was going after me. And so I told him, I said, you know, this next interview after me, you can cut that one short. And so he starts laughing. And then Kim is working with them right now. She was like, yeah, all 4 stations, everybody kind of just jumps around from station to station around here. And he made the comment, he's like, I can't believe there's 4 stations here because in Charleston there was only 2.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I think he may have been a little bit just a little bit overwhelmed, but not in a negative way, but just how much he had to do that day.
And this is Kendrick Haskins with us from Wave 3. And then I asked you the same question that I asked, you know, about Mark Pope. How does Louisville basketball feel different now talking to Pat Kelsey? What do you get from his vibe about what he expects from the team and how he feels about the program?
I think the expectation is probably about the same, but it's not this doom and gloom that was heading over the program when Kenny took over. Mm-hmm. And in Kenny's defense, it was doom and gloom when he took over. But the way that Kelsey is attacking it is like, okay, that's in the past. We're moving forward, to borrow John L. Smith's saying, we just rip off the rearview mirror.
Right.
That's kind of the vibe you get from him. And I think at this point, that's what this fan base needed. Because, okay, all of that stuff is officially in the past now. And so let's quit dwelling on the program is broke and all that stuff that Kenny used to say all the time. And get back to, hey, this is a tradition-rich program. It's one of the best programs in the country. Let's get it back there.
And I think that's a great observation by you. And I think that was, you know, other than the losing, which was the biggest frustration for Louisville fans, I think the second biggest frustration for them was the continued reminder of just how broken everything is and how bad it is and how hard it is to win here and how hard it is to recruit here and all the other things that Kenny Payne really was pushing, where Pat Kelsey is the polar opposite and is like, no, we can win here. No, we can recruit here. And so far, he's shown the ability to recruit and to do well in the transfer portal, where Kenny Payne, you know, did a good job recruiting, didn't do a great job in the transfer portal, but just the optimism from Pat Kelsey, he's not just full of excuses right off the jump, where Kenny Payne was, you know, his first press conference was, this is going to be a rough and long ride.
Right, and I think Kenny was just trying to brace people because in the olden days, yeah, it would have been, but with NIL and transfer portal, it doesn't take that long. And, like, the fans at this point, they need to hear positives, and you don't want to hear your coach saying, well, it's hard to recruit because this, that. If you're Kentucky, if you're Louisville, Duke, Carolina, Kansas, all them, you're not trying to hear that you can't recruit against somebody else.
Yeah, right,
right.
That's
what you want to hear.
No.
And that's what Pat Kelsey's coming in saying. It's like, no, we can go up against anybody.
Exactly. And he's shown that with the way he's scheduled the non-conference. I mean, they're going to have Tennessee coming into the Yum Center. They're doing that battle for Atlantis. You know, they pulled, you know, a tough team with Chris Beard, Ole Miss, and the SEC-ACC Challenge. So, I mean, Pat Kelsey definitely has not shied away from the challenges and, you know, scheduling. You know, I know he didn't have any choice over Battle of Atlantis that was already set up, and he didn't really have a choice in the SEC-ACC Challenge, but I don't think he views those as roadblocks. He views them as opportunities, and, hey, we got these big-time opportunities. Let's take them early on. Instead, you know, with Kenny Payne, it was like, well, you know, we might not do good here, but I'm looking for fight and all these other things. It's just such a sea change between the way the two talk about the program.
And I think even the perception, too, because, like, U of L wasn't even invited to play in the ACC Challenge last year.
Yeah.
And now they're back in it in 1 year after a 12-win season. And so I think the perception nationally has already started to change because of the positive vibes and influx of energy that Kelsey has brought to the program.
Oh, CBS Sports had their way too early SEC or not SEC ACC standings. They had Louisville fourth, Kendrick. I mean, you go from the, you know, the bottom of the league to number four. That's a pretty hefty jump, and it's all just based on what Pat Kelsey's done in the offseason. So, like you said, from a national perspective, it's definitely resonating. It's resonating with the Cards fans as well. Kendrick Haskins with us, Wave3.com. So, Kendrick, the NBA Finals are over. Wasn't the most exciting series. Dallas only able to win one game. Boston wins handily, and they won pretty much every series in the NBA playoffs handily. I mean, there was no question. I don't think that they were the best team. But one of the critiques of this Boston team is that they're just kind of vanilla and boring, and it will be one of those teams that won a championship. And you're like, oh yeah, that Boston team won a championship. What do you think about that narrative out there about this team?
If I'm a Boston Celtic or a Boston Celtic fan, I don't care.
Right, exactly, yeah.
We got a chip. It doesn't matter. Just like the Spurs all those years. You think they cared that they were boring?
Right. Nope. Oh, yeah, you're right. It was like Tim Duncan doesn't have the personality, and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, they're boring, and da-da-da-da-da. Like you said, it didn't matter because every other year they were winning the championship during that run.
And the great thing about Tim Duncan is, like, if you hear players talk about Tim Duncan, he's hilarious.
Yes.
Especially
a lot like Kawhi.
His trash talking is hilarious.
Yes.
And the way he was able to keep his personality totally out of the spotlight is funny, because every player that plays against him says he's funny.
I will always respect that man, too, for the retirement tour he did not do.
Yeah.
He was like, all right, I'm done. I'm out. But he reminds me so much of Kawhi Leonard. Like, I don't know. I just love that. Like, I feel like Jokic is going to do the same thing. Like, I came here to play. I'm done. Quit trying to make it more than it is. Like, I'm not, like, a product put out there. Like,
yeah,
I'm
Jokic
funny. I am
Kawhi,
what I am.
You're just going to look up for
Yes.
Yeah. See? Well, Jokic and Kawhi are both. You're gonna just look up one day and see it on the scroll.
And it'll be gone.
Yeah. Hey,
it's not gonna be the starting five.
Hey, they retired. They will do a retirement tour.
I love that.
The only thing you'll know is Jokic is doing it. Is playing with his horse.
He could be killing it at the horse game.
Exactly. Where do you stand on the Jason Tatum stuff? I didn't know. Look, I'm an outside NBA observer. I'm not as in depth with it as you, Kendrick. I do follow the playoffs and the finals and watch those. But I didn't know that Jason Tatum was as disliked. I didn't know that there was this big annoying dislike of Jason Tatum. But before they won the championship, and I'm seeing all this Jason Tatum hate on my timeline on Twitter, and I'm like, I just thought he was just kind of boring in there, but like people like hate Jason Tatum. I didn't know that existed. I didn't know there are people that hated Jason Tatum the way they do.
They don't. Twitter. It's just Twitter being Twitter. I mean, there's, you could question things about his game because he has had bad games and big spots. But overall, for his career, I mean, the guy's made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think, every year in his career.
Right.
And he's still only, 25?
Yeah.
He's already got him a title. He got his first title before Kobe, before Jordan, before Shaq, before Steph, LeBron, all of these guys. And you could have made the case that he probably should have been the MVP of this final. So that's what they're going to hold over his head now, because they were holding that over Steph's head.
Right.
Oh, well, he's never won NBA Finals MVP, which is so stupid. But, I mean, he just seems like a nice guy. He's got the greatest kid in the world. That kid is hilarious whenever they show him on television.
Deuce.
And so I think it's just – everybody loves Deuce. Mm-hmm. He's like the most famous kid in the NBA.
Swear.
And so I think a lot of it is just Twitter being Twitter and just narratives that just come up during the finals because they have to sell you something.
Right.
And selling that Jason Tatum has all this approval is the selling point, even though – that guy, he's done just about everything. He's been first team NBA for like 3 or 4 years in a row.
So, right.
The guy's legit.
Oh, no, he is. Legit. He's absolutely legit. He's fantastic. Last one for you, Kendrick Haskins, before we let you go on about your day there at Wave 3. Now that UK baseball's done, you know, Derby's over, PGA's over, things are kind of settling down. What are you going to focus on now in the sports department? And again, all the high school baseball's over with and softball's over with as well. What are you guys focusing around right now on Wave 3? Are you guys going to look at these TBT teams in Louisville, Kentucky? What are you guys going to look at?
We're going to look at taking a break.
Damn right.
Deep breath. There's no coaching changes. I mean, judging by the two recruits that just committed to UofL baseball, Dan McDonald's not going anywhere.
Right.
So now we just go out. We find stories at this point. I did a story last night on Amber Jackson. She plays for UofL soccer. She transferred in from Oregon State, and she also she played soccer and ran track at Oregon State, and she's diabetic.
Oh, wow.
And so she's a two-sport D1 athlete and is diabetic, and she just came back from this camp with other diabetic athletes. So that was really cool, and she could not have been cooler. She was she was great. So I go out there and do the interview. I really didn't have much video of her. So I was like, I'll just do some tricks with the soccer ball. And she, for one, she bounced the ball consistently on her head for like 15 seconds straight.
That's wild.
And she was doing all this stuff. And the funny thing is, so I think I told you all last week that Jada Curry from the UofL women's basketball team, she's interning with us this summer.
Yes, you did. Awesome. Yes. So,
yeah. So she was with me, and like Amber's doing all kind of things with the ball or whatever, and Jada says, "How do you do that with your feet?" Everyone's like, "You do that with your with the basketball." I was like, "No, if I was to do that with my feet, I'd fall over."
That's funny.
No, that and exactly. Jada and is hilarious. As athletically gifted as Jada is, I'm sure it still blew her mind to watch someone do that with their feet with the soccer ball. I couldn't do any of it. I can't do anything with a soccer ball.
And she was. And the whole time, Amber was like, "Yeah, this isn't that impressive." Meanwhile, Jada and I just standing there with our mouths open with stuff that she was making look so easy to do.
Yeah, I could definitely do that.
Not impressive at all.
See, Jada should have been like, "Come into the practice facility. Let's see if you can do this with a basketball. Start dribbling between your legs and doing all that."
Teach me.
Jada's quiet, but she can be a little feisty, and it is so funny.
I love that.
I did a story with Jay Scrub, the former Trinity star.
Yeah.
He was actually a member of the Celtics. And he in the summer league, and he tore his ACL. So he's technically still a member of the Celtics, but he won't get a ring this year.
Right.
So we go and do the story. We get done, and Jay's kind of messing around, shooting on his basketball hoop in the backyard of the guy's house we were at. And he missed some shots, and he didn't realize that Jada played for U of L.
I like where this is going.
So I said, "You're not impressing my basketball player right here." And he was like, "Oh, you play?" She's like, "Yeah, I play for U of L." He's like, "Oh, we can play one-on-one right now." She says, "Judging by your shot, it looks like you need to practice."
Good. Okay, I love her. That's I'm her awesome. Number one fan.
That's fantastic. Well,
that is awesome. I mean, next time she's in the office with me when you all call, I'll put her on.
Yeah, please put her on for sure. Absolutely.
Please do.
Would love that. Absolutely.
Yeah,
well,
she's great.
Well, good luck finding stories this summer, Kendrick. Enjoy a bit of a break before football season starts. You know, those summer camps are right around the corner, so there'll be plenty to cover there for the Cats.
Six weeks away.
Yeah, get a little break. Luckily, you don't have to go to SEC Media Day, so good for you. You don't have to go down there for that spectacle. All right, appreciate the time, Kendrick. We'll talk to you next week, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah, have a good one.
All right, there we go. Kendrick Haskins, our weekly visit with our friend from Wave 3. Have you ever been to SEC Media Days, Anna?
Yeah, yes, I have, football and basketball.
Basketball is one thing. It's like it doesn't last as long.
No, and there's you have the men pomp. And women together, which is cool.
Yeah, and it's not the pomp and the circumstance of the football media days. I mean, I just imagine it to be the most miserable, boring. Oh, it's fun? Really? I thought it'd be boring as hell.
No, dude. I guess it depends on how you're wired, but like, I loved it. That was like one of my BVN Tonight job that I loved. Like, that was one of the things that I loved the most because it was nonstop work from the moment we hit the door to the moment we left. I think we produced like 12 packages. We did like a package on each team, and it was awesome because when you're working in TV, and Kendrick was, you know, alluding to this as well, when there's not a lot going on, especially in the summertime, you have to scrounge for stories. You have to do a lot of human interest stories.
Sure.
You have to, SEC Media Days, it's all handed to you. And it's not handed to you in the way, like, you have to do the work and cipher out what a coach is saying. But from a press conference from a coach, every coach from the SEC, you can develop a story from what they're telling you.
Right.
So it gives you so much content. Going to that, the Media Days I went to, I mean, like, it helped me for coverage for the rest of the year.
Nice.
Because I had background knowledge on any time Kentucky played a team. I've heard their coach speak. I've talked to their players. Mm-hmm. And I know just kind of like their vibe overall, just a better vibe of like what you're going up against and what their strengths and weaknesses are. But I loved it. I would go back every year if I could because it just gives you a really good, and that's not to be like around the coaches or around players. It's like it just gives you such a good read on what's going on that season, especially even just interacting with other media as well. Dude, the opposite of boring. You can get a tidbit from every little site. Standing in the breakfast line, you're talking to a radio guy from Alabama and you're getting a new tidbit.
And I'm sure it gives
it.
You more of a foresight and insight into every single game they play because you already have a read on the team. Like you're saying, the coaches, the players
you
interact with.
In your reports, you can bring up quotes that their coach said because you remember them. And even talking to their players. Like, so no, that is something that I miss, like going to those big events like that because it just helps you cover teams more.
Right.
Because I feel like we talk about teams, but to truly cover a team, like you have to be in there and talking to coaches, talking to players, and their opponents at big and little moments. So that, I just just loved doing that because it just shaped my whole view of the season. And that also helped me just understand where Kentucky is on in the perspective in the SEC, and especially Mitch Barnhart, the respect that coaches have for that man in the SEC is unbelievable. And that's something I never would have known if I hadn't worked in SEC media days. That is like the pinnacle. And I've done Super Bowls and stuff, not like behind the scenes stuff. And that's a little bit different. Like that kind of radio row is all entertainment, but media days, it's just an information extravaganza.
Huh.
You get these little tidbits that you can pull out that no one else will remember.
See, that's,
or no one else will know.
That's the exact opposite of what I thought it would be. I thought it'd be like a struggle, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't. I don't want to hear, you know, Hugh Freeze talk today.
No. It's a wealth of riches now, of little facts.
Is there stuff to do in Hoover?
There's a Whataburger, that's all I know.
So but y'all like, weren't out on the town. You don't have time to go out on the town and like hang out. Like,
if you're addicted to it like me, if you were in Las Vegas, you wouldn't even want to leave the hotel room. Conference room.
Because there's so much information
so
there.
Be there. And learning more, just being immersed in it.
Yeah.
Maybe other people aren't like that. But to me, I was like, there's no other place I'd rather be in the freaking world right now than talking about this, than doing this, than being around this, than being part of the conversation. Not even part of the conversation. Just having an ear to the conversation.
That's interesting.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's definitely not what I expected. No.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good insight though.
It just gives you access that you normally wouldn't have.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Now I want to go.
Hey, if ESPN 680 wants to send me.
Yeah, and it'll go. She'll go. She'll be our woman on the streets. All right, let's take a break on the other end. We'll have Weird Wednesday. I'll have that all set up and ready to knock it out for you today. Sonatrol of Louisville, if you're looking for security for your home or your business, this is the place to go. Okay, 350 five-star reviews on Google means they're the number one rated security company in Kentucky. They're locally owned and family operated over 35 years. They're a homegrown company. We love our homegrown companies here on ESPN Louisville, especially on the Roundtable. They have a team of local experts that'll work with you from tailoring your system to your home or business and servicing your needs down the road. So if you have a fix you need, or if you have an upgrade you want to make, whatever you want to do, they'll come out and they'll help you out with that. They're very knowledgeable with their staff and their equipment, and their technology is second to none. And they have that no false alarm guarantee. That's a big deal because those false alarms, if they continue to rack up, they'll start charging you for every single false alarm. You don't want that. You don't want the police or the fire department showing up to your house at 3 a.m. and there's nothing going on because your system malfunctioned. Again, a zero false alarm guarantee from Sonatrol of Louisville. Sonatrol, they just don't do security. They also do cameras, badge access, fire monitoring. You do it all from your phone, SonatrolKY.com.
Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has 4 area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Iroquois Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Thank you to the Black family. I'm big fans of theirs.
Welcome back to the Roundtable with Round Daddy. Now here's Round Daddy, James Strebel.
Oh, Bob Valvano.
We
love you, Bob.
Happy Juneteenth.
Love you, Bob Valvano.
I wish James that today. I walked in. I go, "Hey, you? James,
did
happy
you
Juneteenth,"
everyone?
And then he just laughed. Or he was like, "Thanks, man."
He laughed. I had a conversation with James off the air about Juneteenth.
About
I won't,
the holiday.
Yeah, I won't bring it to the air, but it was funny. We had a few laughs over it. It's the round table here on ESPN 680, 1057, 437-9680 here in the Liquor Barn Studios. Anna Tarullo, James Strebel, Tanner Brutamesso. Again, don't forget Loose City at Pittsburgh, Riverhounds tonight, 6:45 p.m. on ESPN 680, 1057. And then Thursday, College World Series Game 14, 7 p.m. on ESPN 680, 105.7 and 93.9 The Ville. And then Friday, Reds versus Red Sox, 6:40 p.m. on ESPN 680, 105.7. So there you go. Actually, we'll have some people in Great American Ballpark. I'm kidding. All right, read a couple texts here. We'll get to Weird Wednesday. Texter.
Go Sox.
Not sure using the phrase "she'll be our woman on the streets" hits right. Okay,
that's right, baby.
That's, yeah. Texture. Great interview. Haskins is a pimp. Thank you.
You ain't lying.
Texture. There are five stations. Don't forget Spectrum News One. Weather on the ones. You're exactly right. Thank you for correcting us, Texture. Texture. Patino would have stayed at UK. He would have been as revered as Coach K is now. 100%.
More so.
And last one, Texture. To stop babying UofL. The record was inflated because they didn't have to play Florida State or Clemson. Dodging the two best teams in the league while squeaking by in five games doesn't mean you're good. You're just lucky. We saw what happened when they played a team with speed and physicality the last three games of the year. Fraudulent season. There we go. Oh, football smack talk.
It took me to 3/4 through that message to decipher which sport they were talking about.
Football. Definitely football. Well, the Louisville fans on Twitter have already picked up on Deion Walker's his comments, and they're not happy.
I think the first time he said it,
no.
He said it with his chest again.
He did, and they're tagging the Louisville football Twitter account.
I'm sure Deion really cares.
Yeah,
he's gonna lose some sleep.
Yeah, he's gonna lose some sleep as he thinks this time next season I'll be training with an NFL team in OTA. So yeah. There we go. All right, let's go ahead and do it. It's Weird Wednesday. Hit the sounder. Let's go, Tanner.
Conspiracies, extraterrestrials, the occult. Gather around the lunch table, children. Don't try to get up. He won't let you leave. It's Weird Wednesday with Mr. Strebel.
All right, Weird Wednesday, and that's always brought to you by our good friends at 502 Hemp, 812 Hemp, DD Taylor and her associates. They have your summer drinks. Try to stay away from the alcohol this summer. Avoid the dehydration. Avoid the hangovers. Avoid the crappy feelings. You can still have a good time. Be social. And, enjoy the party without alcohol. They have canned beverages. They have the powder form. It's a powder form. They told me surprisingly potent. So
really?
Yes.
Like, is it like a Kool-Aid situation?
It's like, you ever had liquid IV?
Oh, yeah.
It's like that. It's like
okay,
a liquid IV.
Okay, like a little crystal light.
Yeah, exactly. Packets or whatever. And you put them in your lemonade or your tea or your soft drink or whatever that is. Don't put it in alcohol. But put it in some non-alcoholic beverage. And you could enjoy it that way as well. 502 Hemp, the Douglas Hills location. 812 Hemp across the river. Lewis and Clark Parkway, Clarksville, Indiana. 502hemp.com. All right, so we're going to start this segment out with a sound. Now, just to recap from last week, we did a – you weren't here, Anna.
Right.
But we did a deep dive. So there was this Harvard paper that was released that said it's likely that – aliens are already here living among us, okay? And then they got this whole idea of them maybe not being from outer space, but they're underground, under the ocean, maybe even have a base on the moon, and they were calling them crypto-terrestrials. So basically, the sound was not connected to the email. Shoot. Okay, I had a sound. I thought I sent it to you, Tanner. Can we do this on the fly real quick then while I set it up? Okay, I'm going to send you this sound again, Tanner. That's my fault. I flubbed that. So I'm doing that. I'll continue to explain things. Okay, so anyway. Can you still follow the directions on the sound? It started at 109. Started at 1:09, then we'll go from there. But anyway, so basically this Harvard paper was describing how with these UFOs, these UAPs, that they're basically earthbound or they've been here for a longer time. The term crypto-terrestrial dealt more with, like, crypto means, unidentifiable or whatever. Terrestrial means earthbound, okay?
So that's what crypto means. So when we call something encrypted, it just means unidentifiable?
Exactly. Okay. There's a whole, cryptozoology is actually a thing. So a cryptozoologist is someone that studies Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and the Jersey Devil and all these cryptids.
So when you say something is cryptic, it just means unknown?
It means unknown mysterious. Or mysterious. Exactly.
Okay. I love that you brought up the Jersey Devil because New Jersey Devils are my favorite hockey team.
There you go.
And it's all because of that.
That's where they got it from. Yeah, mm-hmm. They got the New Jersey
Which
Devils
is cool
from.
As hell. I want to be a fan just because they respected the lore.
They did. They respected the lore of the Jersey Devil. All right, so this Harvard paper came out last week, and it made the rounds. I mean, it became national. All the national news outlets picked up on it. Mm. It was discussed on a lot of the news magazines, news websites, and even made it to Fox News. Whoa, with Jesse Waters. He's MAGA or whatever. And again, I printed this at the beginning of the show. I don't care where the clip came from. I don't care if it was on CNN or MSNBC or ABC or wherever else. It's interesting because they actually speak to one of the Harvard professors mm-hmm. that put this paper together and said, okay, explain what you're talking about here. So it's about 2.5-3 minutes long. I started it kind of in the middle of go past the introductions. Go ahead, Tanner. Let's go.
A Pentagon official came forward this week revealing their 7-minute encounter with a glowing turquoise UFO, which gave off enough energy to power a city. That official isn't alone. More UFO whistleblowers are breaking their silence and exposing what they've seen. Watch.
Oh my gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 miles to the west. Look at that thing, dude. It's rotating.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Wow.
The biological anthropology professor who conducted this study, Michael Masters, joins us now. Okay, professor. Have you seen one of these, what are they called, crypto-terrestrials living among us?
I have not seen one personally, no. And actually, the study is a very conservative approach to this question. As you did a great job highlighting in your intro piece there, this is a real phenomenon, and we need to take it seriously, and we need to start asking the questions about what are they, who are they, where are they coming from, potentially when are they coming from, and even could they have set up shop here on Earth in the past and be living amongst us?
Wow, you say it's a real phenomenon. How do we know it's a real phenomenon?
I mean, if you look across time and space, these have been reported for millennia. And even if you don't want to take that at face value, look at the cockpit videos, look at all of the reports by military police officers whose testimony we can certainly take seriously because they're trained to identify things that are a threat. And they're trained to identify things that are unexplainable. And there's so many cases where they do report just that.
So the difference is we all see these things or hear about them visiting, right? In the spaceship or there's a sighting. But this study takes it a step further. It's saying they're living among us. Does that mean like Gutfeld's an alien and he's just disguised as a cable TV host?
It's certainly possible, and I would look into that because you never know. But we should take the question of UFOs seriously. What we're trying to do is offer a grounded scientific approach to some possibilities about what they might be. So, yeah, there have been other proposals as well. Me personally, I've written 3 books about whether they could be future human time travelers coming back to visit their own past, and in the same way I would as a biological anthropologist if I had access to that technology, and that is one of the possibilities we include in this paper as well.
Oh, I would do that too. I'd go back in time. I'd play high school football all over again, and I'd do so much better.
And you know what the other team's going to do because
exactly.
You're from the future.
I'd pick off every pass. Yeah. It'd be great. All right, Michael Masters, thank you again.
Okay, so there we go. So the main thing was there talking to the anthropologist professor about how this is an old phenomenon, and that's right. And also, I mean, another interesting aspect to all this is the theory that they are us from the future coming to the past to see what we're doing. And that's actually a popular theory amongst people that don't want to believe, or maybe, you know, not that they don't want to believe, but they think there's stronger evidence that that's what it is, other than ultra-terrestrials or extraterrestrials or crypto-terrestrials. That's just us from the future.
Right. And I feel like you and I have talked about that. I love that that was touched on. What interested me was when he said this was a conservative approach. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if we said some of the things people who study this, what they really think or all that they have encountered, people would not even be able to buy it because there's been this disinformation campaign for decades.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm curious about is, for this is an anthropological professor, right?
Right.
Anthropology professor. And he said, you know, this has been going on for millennia, et cetera. There has to be documentation of that we have hidden. It's like, will we ever see that type of documentation of what we think it is? And I feel like there's been like a campaign to like silence that.
Yes, suppress it and to keep it down. And there's a lot of that going on, not only with this question, but also the question of human origins and how long we've been here and how back society actually goes. And to the credit of people in the masses, like people like me, people like you, and just normal everyday people, and then people with a platform, whether it be a podcast or a news station or a TV show or whatever it is, are now starting to ask those questions and be like, okay, why is there a concerted effort from the intellectual base, the old guard of archaeology or anthropology or astrophysics, to not push these questions forward and to maybe hide these things? It's an age-old question. I mean, they've been hiding information from us for a long time.
Since the 40s, at least.
Well,
been lies.
I mean, even if you just don't look at America,
right?
As you know, obviously we're going to think about us, you know, in the present, in the now, where we are, how we exist as Americans. But going back before that millennia of the power structures that be suppressing information, and you know, we talk a lot about, you know, Roman suppressing information, the Vatican suppressing information. That's not an uncommon thing. Those that are in power seem to want to control narratives to a point where they just don't want you to know certain things. And the history of who we are and the history and the actual reality that we live in definitely seems to be one of those things that for whatever reason, the structures and the powers that be don't want all that information coming out.
Right. And it's so weird that we just choose to believe it now when there has been centuries of evidence that they have suppressed and hidden things from us. Like, even looking at, I feel like Native Americans have this deep relationship with things that they've seen, you know, in the sky or encounters that they've had. And it's like, we want to put that off as like, oh, that's just, you know, maybe their type of spirituality. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're like more prone to
it's
see
part
that.
Of their religion.
Right,
or, right,
the thing,
exactly.
Or their culture. But it's I think it's going to be mind bending, and we've seen this since that New York Times article came out in 2017 that like fully admitted that there was these
in
UAPs.
The beginning of that sound where you had the guys talking, that comes from that. Those are pilots that were tracking whatever that thing was, and you could hear their voices and how just shocked and surprised they were at how fast it was going against the wind and not knowing what it was.
Yes,
and now that now this out, there's we talked about it last week a little bit with Phil, how this idea of suppressing the information from within the military, within the Pentagon, that was a taboo, and that taboo's being broken in real time, and we're watching it happen.
Yes, man, as soon as he said against the wind, my ADHD kicked in, and I was like, Bob Seger, focus.
Seger, running against the wind.
I'm just interested now, it's like, so we had some whistleblowers. That's like what made the 2017 thing happen, right?
Yes.
But like, what was the atmosphere that the New York Times would pick up a piece about it and have the confidence to publish it?
Because there was video attached to it.
Okay.
Because there was visual, there was actual, it wasn't just a person's narrative or experience, them telling them what happened. There was visual and audio, as you heard, visual and audio evidence. So you had firsthand account, you had video evidence, and you had audio evidence. And you know, coming from a news background, that, you know, those are the three pillars that you need to build a story on. Sources, are the sources good enough? Are the sources tangible other than word of mouth or my word against yours? What else is there? But I think that was the difference. The difference was you could see it. You could hear it. And even if you didn't know what you were looking at first, there were people that were the firsthand account, people that saw it and experienced it were like, okay, this is what's going on here. This is why this shocked us. And I think that was the biggest change in all of it, was that story broke the mold open. And now here we are with Harvard doing studies about it. And
that's crazy to me.
Exactly. Harvard. Harvard. Yeah.
So it's like, it's not like some little like community technical institute.
It's not. Oh gosh, what's the UFO research? MUFON. It's not like MUFON. You know, these are serious people.
A respected institution that like wouldn't want to spend money on something that
and approaching it in a scientific way. And that's the other problem that the old establishment science has is like, well, this isn't science. It's like, okay, no, then we're going to look at it in a scientific way. We're going to approach it with the rules of science, and then whatever our conclusions are after that, we'll get to that. But this is, we're laying the framework based in a scientific, based on a scientific paradigm that we're building on this. Now, go ahead.
What's interesting and scary is when they were talking about, okay, you look to space, you look to the sky, but also like the ocean of like what can be there.
See, that's what freaks Phil out too. He's all into like the underwater UAPs and like what's beneath us and what's below us. In terms, because the ocean's a lot. I said this last week, and it's true. We know less about the ocean
than we do about space.
Yes, which is mind boggling because the ocean's right here.
Yes, and have you seen the thing recently with the anglerfish? I believe they're called the ones that like.
They have the little light on there.
Well, like two of them have washed up. There's something happening in the oceans right now. Two of them have washed up on shore recently,
and they're super deep.
They're so deep in the ocean.
We can't go down there.
We cannot go down there. So before, all they really had was remnants of them. Two fully complete ones have washed up in the past year or so.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and they've put them in museums.
That is
rare.
But it's
like things like, in the scale of them, they're huge. They're like 5 feet long.
Oh, yeah. They're not these little bitty fish.
They're huge. And that there's something happening in the ocean right now. I think there are a lot of like seals or something all kind of hanging out off the coast of like somewhere in California. Like something is happening in the ocean that we're getting things like that. It is so rare for something like that to be like expressed onto the earth when like normally if you're coming from that deep somewhere, like there would only be parts of it, like other animals would try to eat it, like, or it would have been decomposed.
Sure, yeah.
Fully intact anglerfish from like the depth of the ocean. Look it up.
Yeah, that's
isn't
crazy.
That scary? And
yeah.
Like, in history, since we've been documenting this, there's not a full, complete one on display, and now they have two in the past calendar year.
Because we've only seen them when they send robots down there to film, National Geographic shows. Like Earth and you know, Blue Planet. And that's the only time we ever see them is sending those things down there. Because again, we can't go down there.
No.
We'll get crushed. We'll die because of the water pressure. But they're able to send robots. And that's great. Now, the other thing I want to talk about here before we take a break is, as I've told you yesterday, I forgot to bring it with me because I have a terrible memory. I've rushed around the house. But I'm reading the Book of Enoch. And it's better than I expected.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, because it's biblical. It's written in the same way that other books of the Bible are written, where you have verses and chapters and everything. So it's there's actually three books of Enoch. There's three of them. And the book I'm reading has all of them.
What?
Okay. Yes, there's three books of Enoch.
I look here.
Which there's a like the and the only Bible, the only Christian Bible on the planet that has it in canon is the Ethiopian Christianity, Ethiopian Orthodox Bible has it in their canon. Like it's like if you have a Bible and you wake up and you see Samuel or Kings 1, Kings 2 or whatever, they have the Book of Enoch in their canon, in their Bible.
I have so many questions.
Which is wild to me.
Why did they choose it and like Roman Catholic didn't?
The Ethiopian church is very, very old.
Also, really quickly, I have a question. Quick question about this. Like, I feel like my mom always told me, like, I've experimented with, like, different churches, different kind of denominations. And one thing my mom always, like, told me, she was like, well, like, the Catholic church is, like, the true church from, like, the beginning of, like, it stems directly from Jesus. And so then I was talking to my friend Sarah. She's Christian, but, like, she's, like, Messianic Christian, Messianic Jewish Christian. So, like, she believes, and, like, they still celebrate a lot of the Jewish holidays, whatever. And her husband is Orthodox.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, wait a minute. I never thought about that. There's Orthodox and Catholic and they split.
They split.
So I said, okay, so then which like sect of it is the true sect? And she was like, well, really they both are. They kind of just split at this time.
So the Orthodox didn't want to follow the Pope.
Okay.
That's why the schism happened.
Peter?
Yeah, Peter was the first Pope. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
But like they both, you could say with both the Catholicism and the Orthodoxy churches, they both stemmed from Jesus directly.
Yes. Correct. Okay. And then one broke, it's mostly the Eastern, like Russia and the Eastern
Greek
European.
Orthodox,
yeah, yeah. The Eastern European countries broke off because they didn't want to. I mean, again, Italy was really far away.
Yeah.
Rome was far away. The Vatican was far away. They're like, why do we have to follow
this guy,
this Pope that's not Peter anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, so we're going to kind of do our own thing. But the traditions, they even have a different Easter than we do.
Yes,
like
they do.
The Easter's on a different day than traditional, like American or European Christian, you know, whether it be Protestant or Catholic. We all celebrate Easter at the same time.
Right.
Eastern Orthodox, they celebrate it at a later date.
Wow.
They have Easter at a different time. But one of the things about the Book of Enoch that kind of like has blown my mind, it's like reading a fever dream, because Enoch goes, like, he basically gets taken up by angels Uriel, Raphael, Michael, and Gabriel, and they take him on this, like, this journey through heaven and history and show him how it all went down with the fallen angels. And so and so when the angels, this is crazy, like, and it names them and everything, like the one of them's name is, oh my god, his name is you have a couple, Simjaza. He was like the leader of the fallen angels. His name wasn't Lucifer, that's the thing,
but
that
he
people
was a fallen
get,
angel,
but he was like the leader of the fallen angels. He was the one that convinced the rest of the fallen angels to go down to earth and to corrupt humanity, so they didn't just go down there and sleep with the women. That wasn't all they did. They taught humans how to build weapons. They taught women. They taught humans how to do sorcery. They taught women, humans, how to do like root work and witchcraft. All these things that God is like, okay, this is not what I want you to be.
It's like a perversion of spirituality.
It's that's a great way to put it. Perversion of spirituality. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that, you know, the name in Simjaza, by the way, isn't mentioned in anything else other than the Book of Enoch. Exactly, Book of Enoch. So there's other like offshoot fallen angels that were called the Watchers, like Azazel, and it's just, it's super interesting to read it and how it all went down.
Especially because like the archangels. So my brother-in-law, he is Muslim, and he talks about how like in the Quran and stuff, they still respect. Is either Michael or Gabriel who like comes
Gabriel
to
was the one
Muhammad.
That they came to Muhammad and
so they
set
believe
out the
in
book
like
of,
these same tenets of these these angels.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a prophet,
absolutely. And they used to worship the stars as angels. Like they thought the stars were the angels in heaven watching over us. They're the watchers, right? And there's also a lot of stuff in there about the eventual apocalypse. Like they foreshadowed the apocalypse. And this is thousands of years before the Book of Revelation was written.
Mm-hmm.
This predates like the Book of Daniel, and it's a very apocalyptic and talks about the end of the earth.
It predates all of that.
Yes, it predates all of it, and it talks about a lot of the tenets that Jesus talked about how, you know, it'll be difficult for rich people to get into heaven. It'll like kings and rulers are because kings and rulers start to worship and want earthly things.
Beatitudes.
Yeah, earthly
blessed
things like money and false idolatry, money, all the seven deadly sins and everything. And again, this goes back and predates. So a lot of the things that Jesus and the apostles and whatever religion you want to talk about, if you want to talk about Judaism, if you want to talk about Islam or whatever, all these tenets are the same. And it all predates that. All the things that Jesus and Muhammad and the prophets in the Old Testament, it all comes from like this.
Why did the Catholic Church not include it?
I don't know.
Like, that's what I want to know.
I don't know, because Enoch's only referenced one time in the Old Testament, and he's Noah's great grandfather. They talk about Noah in it too, and so Noah's son was Methuselah, who was the oldest. Yes, he's the oldest person
dad
in the Bible.
To make Methuselah
jokes.
He's the old guy. I'll be like, oh, Methuselah.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's super interesting. And then later in the book, it gets down to
is Lilith in that book?
Not yet.
Okay.
I don't know. She may be in one of the other books, but
Lilith
was like she's like the anti-Eve.
She's like the dark feminine.
She was like she was the first woman that God made for Adam. Yes, that was Lilith. And she rejected the, I guess, assignment or whatever God wanted her to do. And then he had to create Eve after Lilith.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that deep? Yeah, yeah. Look up.
I created you, and you're wrong because of how the.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole. That's why the. Remember the old festival, the Lilith Fair? With like, okay, so in the 90s, they had all the festivals started popping off again.
They were popping
they
off.
They were. They had the,
we
the,
had Ren Fair. They had everything.
They had Woodstock, Woodstock 94. They had Woodstock 99. That's when they started. Oh, what's the Lollapalooza? Was started. And so they had all these festivals starting up in the 90s. So they decided to do like a feminism festival.
And they named it Lilith.
It's called the Lilith Fair. And like Sarah McLachlan and Alanis Morissette and Fiona Apple and like all the big, you know, ladies in the 90s would perform. And I didn't care. Like when I was a kid, like watching MTV News, they're talking about the Lilith Fair or whatever. I was like, oh, that's, you know, something for the ladies to do and to highlight their artists. I had no idea that it was named after that Lilith.
I didn't know about Lilith until this year. And I'm 31 years old. Like I didn't know anything about
it. There's also lore about Lilith being the first vampire, too.
Oh.
Yeah. About Lilith being the first vampire.
Man, that's so interesting. All right, we gave her a shot. It didn't really work out.
It didn't really work out. So we're gonna go to Eve. We're going to try her out and then see if she'll be better. And then, yeah. Isn't that wild?
That's mind-blowing. I need to investigate that.
Yeah, investigate. We should do a Lilith show next week.
Let's do it.
Let's do a Lilith show next week.
Let's do it.
We'll talk a little Lilith next
week. I'm in.
All right, let's read some. Let's see. Not reading that one. I read some texts. I'm skipping over that one.
Texture, nice.
The movie Noah is pretty dark at times. No, that's the crazy thing. Like, people crap all over that. Have you ever seen the movie Noah, directed by Darren Aronofsky?
No.
It has Russell Crowe as Noah.
I thought about Bruce Almighty 2, where he like does like a Noah's Ark.
Oh, okay. So the Darren Aronofsky Noah movie is actually biblically accurate because they have like the Nephilim in there. They have giants and stuff. It's wild.
That's scary.
It's because
that's on my list.
Because the Earth was being corrupted by the Watchers and their offspring were the Nephilim. And so, you know, that's why God flooded the Earth.
To get rid of
and it talks about that.
Like those giants. Yes, weren't they giants?
Yeah, they were giants. And exactly. They were like, they weren't just giants. They also were just like impure. Like, because they were made in an impure way. And they were corrupting.
We didn't get rid of all
like
of
drinking blood and eating humans and stuff like that. And that's why I was like, okay, this has got to go.
I think we missed out on a few. I think they're still roaming around.
They say that demons are the leftover spirits from the Nephilim because they weren't allowed to heaven because they were impure. So they were stuck bound to earth and under earth with the Watchers because they were the progeny of the Watchers. They were evil progeny of the Watchers. So that's what demons are. Basically all the demons and everything and Satan, the adversary, Satan's a name. Satan's the adversary, which may be Simjaza. They're all like basically God banished them and put them in, if you want to call it hell,
right?
And so the whole idea about Revelation is one day this is going way longer than I thought it would.
Sorry.
So no, it's okay. So basically, the end of the world in Revelation, the apocalypse. Okay, the apocalypse basically means revelation. All right. So when the apocalypse happens, we're being influenced. We're being pushed by the spirits of the fallen angels of the Nephilim were being corrupted as humanity. Worldly, because they kind of rule this realm. Mm-hmm. They're on this realm with us. And they're the ones that are pushing all these harmful agendas to humanity. And eventually they'll get to a point where they take us over and we do their bidding. And that's when... Yes, and that's when the second coming happens to free you from the clutches of the evil ones, which are the Nephilim and the Watchers.
Okay, so for that to happen, things have to get so bad, right? Like,
yeah, things are gonna
get bad.
Is that
why Jesus came the first time? Because you think about Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah,
and,
yes.
Right. Like that, I feel like that is like overdone as an example. Like there were some weird, the Roman Empire, there were some weird, nasty, gross.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Going on, right?
Yeah, every.
So every society,
every
culture
society has something
that.
Like that. Yes.
So, do you believe we're on like a slow descent to like the evilest to where the rapture has to happen, or it's like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, what is
well, the rapture is, so the rapture is when, that's the idea. And this
when
is
Jesus
more,
comes back.
No. So the rapture is, this is more of a Protestant thing.
Okay.
So the rapture is when people will just disappear. So those that are already saved, by God, those that have already, you know, are walking,
those
will be taken right up. They'll just, one day we'll be like hanging out, like we'll doing a radio show like this, and Tanner disappears.
We lost Leslie.
Like, exactly.
Tanner left.
And then so
we saw him, we said.
The people that are left back, those are the people that are going to have to go through the tribulation. Those are the people that will have to live through the Antichrist and all the bad stuff and eventually come back through on the other side, those that don't go with the agenda, and be welcomed into heaven. But yeah, that's what the rapture is.
That's so interesting. I feel like you could name this for every kind of era in history. You could kind of see it that way.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know? I mean, there's always, I mean, people thought that World War II was going to be the end of the world.
How could you not?
Exactly.
Nuclear weapons, too, after that?
Absolutely.
Like,
so
maybe each society has its own little apocalypse.
Well, everything's
moment.
Cyclical.
Of course.
And that's what
the beef of my question was like. Yeah, is this just like a cycle from when Jesus came the first time?
Yes. And then they'll come back again, and then everything starts over again. Everything starts anew.
That's stressful.
Yeah, it is. It's very stressful. Well, people think that actually the Mayan 2012 apocalypse actually happened. Like, that was the end of the Kali Yuga, and that we're on the downside of it. Like, it's already happened. Like, the end of it happened. And instead of the world just ending, the world starts its descent.
Starts just disintegrating too. Yes. Especially, I think you have to keep this perspective. It's a worldwide view, not just like American. Like,
exactly.
You can look,
no, this
you can look
is,
at
it's
it as
a
like American politics,
it's,
right?
But,
like,
but
everything went wrong.
A,
but that's such a.
It's exactly. It's so it's so just focused on us. But this is a worldwide thing. Mm-hmm. This dates back to every culture, every religion. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about it before, but they had that tribe in Brazil in the Amazon rainforest,
uncontacted,
and they showed them a picture of a gray or whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, we know what that is.
We've seen them all the time.
Yeah, that thing will steal your soul.
Yes.
Just automatically just look at it and say, yeah, that'll steal your soul. Like,
see,
that's
here's the thing. I feel like we think we are so blessed and stuff, like living in the moment we do in time and society in this country, but it's like also one thing you're not blessed with is perspective and with like vision outside of yourself and outside of your place in the world. Like, if you're like, oh, it's the apocalypse because our government isn't doing great. It's like, dog, right. There's a million other governments.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
You're not the
that's
only
a great
one
point.
Here. Like, you need to be thinking about a little bit more.
But watch if
yourself.
They all. But here's the thing. Here's the thing to watch out for. Watch if they all start unifying together.
The governments?
Yes.
Oh, world baby, that's already happening.
United Nations, the European Union. Yeah.
Dog.
And if
that's
it keeps going.
That's been happening.
Yeah. And if it keeps going.
Maybe World War II was it.
Yeah. Maybe. All right. Let's take a break on the other end. We'll get back to sports, I promise.
If we must.
And then I'll read some text, too, because there's a lot of text coming in. We'll go ahead and get to those. You're listening to the Roundtable here on ESPN 680 105.7. Sports next!